from zero. Here you can see list of institution. List of institutions which participate in this project. It's mainly Russian institution from Moscow, from Irkutsk, from Novosibirsk, so Dubna. Three groups from different Germany institution, from Italy, from Romania, from Poland. It is, in comparison with previous talks, it is not in the Fermi Lab, not in CERN or in China, it is in Russian Siberia. And it is a rare case where such international collaboration participate in experiment which is in Russia. Here the list of the people who participate in this activity. It's 70 people from laboratories nuclear problem from another laboratories. our activity is mainly it is investigation of multi-GeV astronomy. Galactic object, extragalactic objects, and measurement spectra of known sources where this stop. Also participation in charged cosmic ray physics, but in this range from 10 to 14 to 10 to 18 EV. But at very high statistic level, what is this is important to as I describe later. Different physical task is have may be investigated in this measurement. It is interesting here. More exactly, he presents the cosmic ray spectrum. This is energy scale, 10 to 15. Here it is 10 to 20. And taiga range, it is in here. Presently, we also participate in two other experiments, Nucleon and TUS, which is, are working in space. And in this region, and here you see the comparison of the data, preliminary data of taiga experiment in comparison with Nucleon experiment. Here you can see clearly the different quality of data, precision here and precision here, it is quite different. Recently, we obtained also results in this region in TUS experiment, which is after the GZK cutoff. We found the first event is energy 10 to the 20. It is the first event which was candidate of this event, which was from the space experiment. What is the reason that we are working with gamma astronomy? It is source of cosmic source of different particles. This gamma, neutrino, charged particles. Charged particle is spent 1 million years before they obtained to our detector. They completely forgot the direction of the source. due to magnetic field in this way. Neutrino and gamma radiation possible to measure directly in the source. And this is why it is interesting, because we have possibility to investigate the mechanism of cosmic ray acceleration, which is not exactly known up to now. Difference between gamma and neutrino, it is neutrino is more difficult measure, it is more expensive to obtain these data. A few detectors are working, iSCOOP, mainly experiment is given the data up to now, Kayan-3net, European experiment, Baikal-GVD. Taiga experiment, they also investigate the same, mainly the same problem connected with mechanism of accelerator, but it's more cheap and more easy to detect. This is the list of new detectors, Taiga, CT8, and LHASA. also, I illustrate here, it is also cosmic ray spectrum, time to energy to the three, and the near region. And near region is different in proton, initial proton or initial heavy particle like iron. So it is very, you see that this is no, this, there are big errors in this region because this region is difficult to investigate in space or in balloon, also from ground-based detector for some reason. Here you see that energy, this is logarithm of atomic numbers. It, you see that in near region, the change of the, average atomic number, but uncertainty is very high. So it's really necessary to obtain the good quality data to understand if it is it will be in different location for a proton and for iron, for example. Two main models exist, electron acceleration and proton hadron acceleration. And both of these models, we obtain gamma. It is for synchrotron, for inverse Compton effect. Here it is from the decay of pion. Also, you see this decay of charged pion gives neutrino, but the same, but from pi zero, it is gamma. Necessary to, if we measure very exactly the time, we can take the into account in contribution of each of this model. Here situation up to now. It is for CRAB spectrum measurement, which is CRAB. It is very special source, which is standard source, which is used for calibration of every new detector. And you see that this is energy, this flux, that no photon with energy more than 100 TeV. This is the aim of our detector, to obtain data in this region. And also you see some existing detector and some prediction, which is rather different. Oops. In field of view, our Taiga detector will be Tycho supernova remnant. This data very poor, not necessary to distinguish contribution on different models. So if we obtain really very good data, also in more energy range, we will evaluate the part of each mechanism of acceleration. So, because gamma spectrum is go down in this low power low, it necessary to have a big detector like 1 kilometer square to obtain data in this multi TeV region. There are two approaches: the CTA detector, which is European project, which proposed to install up to 100 different Cherenkov telescope of different size. It will be rather expensive, so up to now it's not decided about the place where it also about financial of this detector. Another one is the detector in Chinese detector in Tibet, where already exists some good detector. It's water detector, Cherenkov detector, it's shown here, scintillator detector. Also, there will be Cherenkov image telescope as we will to try to use in our INTEGRA experiment. Here this, you can see comparison. It is a Hasse detector, and it is existing detector which is working now. In our approach, we will use array of so-called high score detector, which is example shown here. These four photomultipliers with Weinstein cone with big PMTs, they elaborate their own trigger, and together it's possible to obtain very good results, very good angular resolution, energy threshold, and what is also important, it have a big field of view, 0.6 steradian. And in our case, in the classical case, investigation is going to if you can simultaneously measure the same event with two different telescopes. In this, we can investigate. It's very good approach, but it is demand distance between two telescopes about 100 meters, which gives the natural upper limits of gamma which is possible to measure in such a way. In our case, we have this telescope of high score detector. We obtain parameter of the shower, its position, angular arrival direction, and also if we have the same signal from this shower from our telescope, we can very good discriminate between hadron and gamma shower. In this case, the distance between telescopes is maybe up to 600 meters, so it is why we have our rather cheap detector. It will be installed in the Tunka area in Siberia, shown here, that Lake Baikal. And in this already exists Tunka 133 array, very good result obtained. And also very high weather condition and infrastructure. Four different type detectors support to use. It is high score, which I just said. Just we see it will incline to see more on the crab on the crab source. Our telescope now is without camera, without mirrors. Also, muon detector with area totally about 2,006 square meters. And also interesting radio measurements. It is already working. Here, the first telescope which was produced here in Dubna previous year. It is drawing, technical drawing, and it telescope itself. He is installed, test in Dubna, to check the it is commissioning, if it is electronic and moving it good very well, and then we'll move to Tunka. Here at the end of August, it was, you can see different phase of the installation in Dubna, in Tunka. So the main parameters, distance of the this dish for mirror, the focal distance, also the number of PMT, number of mirrors, it's 33 mirrors, the 16 diameter. And field of view, it is approximately 10 by 10 degree. Here you see it is, I already said that about camera. It looks like here, approximately 550 PMTs of this type, and etc. Also, this is camera. It is divided in cluster. Each cluster consists of 28 PMTs with one data acquisition board based on Mark III channels. the local trigger was elaborated just here for each cluster. Also, it is one cluster. It's how it is looks our telescope in Siberia. And here is the first event which was measured together with telescope in high-score array. You see the picture, and evaluation energy of this event is about 700 TeV. It is a telescope. Our plan for nearest years to it is existing telescope. Red square, it is high score detector. Different color shown the, our future to increase number of the high score detector up to 100. Now it is only 30. And this is second detector, which where production of this is in progress, at, in future. Here you can see the, a few picture production of second telescope at Dubna. Approximately 50% is already done, and it will be complete maybe end of the year, or in any case it will be installed in Dunka in spring next year. So the final structure of the Taiga detector, it will be up to 16 telescopes and 500 high score detectors. And besides our mechanical activity, we also participate in Monte Carlo simulation, because Monte Carlo simulation is important to evaluate how distance between telescopes should be. Here, the result of this simulation, dependent of energy, cosmic ray rejection. You see that at about 100 TeV, rejection it is good, at the 1 to 100. And from this evaluation was obtained also integral sensitivity of our detector, how it depends on energy in comparison with existing telescope, CTA and El Hasso, and here Taiga without Cherenkov telescope and with Cherenkov telescope. Here also are interested to obtain data about cross-section, about cross-section proton-proton, proton-nuclear, because you see this energy, this measured cross-section, it is data from the telescope array, from the, it is in comparison with data which may be obtained with LHC. Here, what is necessary for this? Very good Monte Carlo. If we have very good Monte Carlo, we can calculate this cross-section. Another interesting for us activity is measurement anisotropy of cosmic ray. Here I present the result of which we obtained in iSCUBA detector during 10 years of data taken. And you see that anisotropy of cosmic ray is different. It is 13 TeV, it is 5 PeV. So it is... I'm finished. It is south sky, what is picture for north sky. We hope obtain this data. So, conclusion, we will continue. Presently we are in preparation experiment. So we will participate design, construction, and test telescope here at Dubna, commissioning and test in Tunka. Also we here at Dubna we obtain data about PMT, which is used in camera. Also, what is new for our activity, we will try to develop technology production of MIRA. For the first telescope, it was taken from some special firm, company, and rather expensive. Also, we'll participate in Monte Carlo, data taking, data analysis. Here, our financial request is very reasonable. We ask for 150 kilodollars for 3 years. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This proposal was reviewed by Edward Bosch. He's not here. I will read for you the relevant parts of his report. He started by reviewing the science and the goals of TAIGA. So I will skip that part and present more what is the scope of the present proposal. The technical realization of the TAIGA project is quite successful. The main goal of the previous stage, the construction of the first telescope and joint operation of the telescope with wide-angle Cherenkov optical stations, is successfully completed. Also, a number of interesting results were obtained, including the energy spectrum of charged cosmic rays, the excess of events from the Crab Nebula, the registration of the light signal from the International Space Station. It demonstrates a good quality level of the array hardware and data processing algorithm. Over the next 3 years, the TAIGA collaboration plans to increase by a factor of 4 from about 0.25 square kilometers to 1 square kilometer the array area and to deploy an additional 2 to 3 IACTs. The installation will be the full-fledged prototype of the TAIGA observatory. The expected integral sensitivity of this array for 200 hours source observation in the energy range of 30 to 200 TeV will be about 10 to the minus 12 erp per centimeter square per second, extending the energy range of the existing experiments. The combined operation of the first Cherenkov telescope of TAIGA IACT and TAIGA High Score Array in the energy range of 30 to 200 TeV is expected to give a good chance to measure the energy spectrum of gamma rays from the Tycho SNR and the main candidate for Pevatron. The collaboration includes representatives from 7 Russian institutions and 4 European institutions. The TAIGA collaboration consists of experts in the field. Thus, there is a good reason to believe that the challenging goals can be really achieved. The JNR group includes 17 scientists and engineers, and the working plan of the group for the time period of 2018 to 2020 is reasonable and achievable. One can recommend the group to increase its participation in the data processing. Financial request for 2018 to 2020 is 50 kilo US dollar per year, including $35,000 for IACT fabrication and $15,000 for scientific trips to participate in the commission shifts and conferences. In addition, $30,000 per year is expected from the Russian, Romanian, Polish, and German grants. The financial request looks reasonable. In summary, the project TAIGA is very interesting, and in my opinion, the continuation of the JNR participation in the project should be approved and fully supported. Okay, that is the internal report. Are there any questions or comments?
Can I add some? It was a remark about our necessary of increase our activity for data processing.
Right.
Oh, I already said about that. In fact, now we obtained the very valuable experience for production of telescopes, and we have possibility to increase our activity. And recently, some very young, a very energetic and clever man, for former student, just start to this activity. So I think that in the near future, we really have possibility to increase our contribution in this part.
Okay, thank you. Any other comment or question? Okay, then we thank again Leonid. We now have two reports, two scientific reports. The first one, I believe it's related to what already we heard from the Fermilab high-intensity muon beams. So the specific title is Search for Muon to Electron Conversion, the Mu2-2E Experiment at Fermilab by James Miller. So please.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here. It's my first trip to JINR, and I'm excited to see the facilities here and meet with the local groups. Thank you for the invitation. What I'm going to do is talk about the Mu2E experiment today in some detail. What is Mu2E? Well, it's a search for charged lepton flavor violation in the conversion of a muon to an electron without anything else in the near field of the nucleus. What we're doing is reusing a lot of the Fermilab accelerator complex as an efficiency measure, and we plan to reach a sensitivity of 10,000 times better than the current world's best measurement of this reaction. And this is expected to give us discovery sensitivity over a very broad swath of new physics. Let's look at some charged lepton flavor violating processes. Some of these are either being updated now in experiments or there are planned future experiments to improve upon them. Certainly in the tau decays, that's one of the major focuses of the upcoming Super B factories, where they hope to improve on current limits by 1 to 2 orders of magnitude. Then we come down to the muon sector, and we have mu plus to E gamma, which is being studied in detail by the MEG experiment right now at PSI. Their best number so far is 4.2 times 10 to the minus 13, and with their upgrade that's underway now, they expect to get down to about 6 times 10 to the minus 14. So there you're getting a couple of orders of magnitude over previous best measurements. There is a mu plus 3E experiment that's being developed at PSI, hasn't run yet. It's still in the design phase, and somewhere in the distant future, they hope to improve on this number by 4 orders of magnitude, which would be spectacular. And then finally, we have the Mu2E conversion that we're talking about today. The current limit is about 7 times 10 to the minus 13, and there are two experiments that have goals of improving that by 4 orders of magnitude. So the thing to notice is that the charged lepton flavor measurements that are expected to have the most dramatic improvements over the future use muons because it's easy to make lots of them and they live a pretty long time. And these are challenges that makes it difficult for the taus. So, as I said, Mu2E conversion is an example of charged lepton flavor. Charged lepton flavor violation. It's a reaction that's forbidden, strictly forbidden in the old standard model because basically The number of muon neutrinos is 1 here, and the number of electron neutrinos is 0. And you have to have 2 neutrinos to maintain the same number of muon leptons and electron leptons on each side of the equation. However, we've observed neutrino oscillations, and so now you can draw diagrams like this, where you create a virtual muon neutrino, and then it oscillates into an electron neutrino, and then mu to e conversion could conceivably go. But this is incredibly small predicted probability, less than 10 to the minus 50, so it's way below any experimental sensitivity. And so we can say that charged lepton flavor violation has no standard model background and makes it a very clean search. On the other hand, new physics models, they have to struggle to suppress mu to e conversion. I'll show some of the diagrams on the next slide. As a note here, the mu to e gamma probability or diagram would just be obtained by removing the quark line. So they're related in diagrams like this. So let's take a look at some of new physics diagrams that can contribute to mu to e conversion. This is a supersymmetric diagram. Rates are predicted to be up to 10 to the minus 15, which would be 50 times more than our above our sensitivity, so it would be a big signal if we had such a big rate. There are other diagrams like heavy neutrino, second Higgs doublet. Then we have compositeness, exchange of a leptoquark, exchanges of heavy Zs and anomalous Z couplings. One thing to notice here is that in the supersymmetric diagram, mu to e gamma would be obtained by just removing the quark line. On the other hand, if you look at these three diagrams, there are no photons around, so mu to e gamma is not going to be sensitive to these except at higher loops. So that's something to bear in mind. And we can sort of parameterize that in terms of an effective Lagrangian, where the first term in the charged lepton flavor violating Lagrangian are loop terms, like the supersymmetric diagram. And the second term is a contact term, okay? And we can dial up the relative magnitudes of these by throwing in a parameter kappa. When kappa is 0, it's all this term. When kappa is infinity, it's all this term. And then somewhere in between, you get mixtures of the two. And lambda is the energy scale. So what we can do now is plot the energy scale, lambda, versus this parameter kappa. And what we see is that the current Meg experiment limit, that should be 4.2 times 10 to the minus 13, would have seen something if the scale was somewhere in here. So it's eliminating this part of the diagram. So it's mainly sensitive to these loop diagrams, and it doesn't have much sensitivity at all to the contact terms. All right? Meanwhile, the syndrome 2 experiment, that's the current limit on mu to e conversion, eliminates this region. Meg eventually will get down to this sensitivity, so they expect to have sensitivity in this region. Mu to e at the 10 to the minus 16 level, which is what we're planning for mu to e, we'll have a sensitivity that looks like this. It's sensitive to both the loop diagrams and the contact terms. Okay, so if a signal is seen by Meg, then by mu to e, then we'll need Meg to sort out what kind of an interaction it is. You can make a similar diagram for mu to 3e that is complementary to both of these sensitivities as well. So it's important to make all three types of measurements, and the important thing to see here is that mu to e has sensitivity across the board. Mu to e has received a lot of support in the high energy community in the United States. It really got going in the 2008 P5 report, which said that mu to e should be pursued in all budget scenarios considered by the P5 panel. The P5 panel in 2010 reiterated their support, and the most recent one in 2013 said the science of MUTE-E is critical to the DOE OHEP mission and is ready to construct. So the best current measurement of MUTE-E conversion comes from the Syndrome 2 experiment that was performed at PSI in Switzerland on a gold target at 7 times 10 to the minus 13. There are two lesser measurements on titanium, one at Syndrome 2 and another at an earlier experiment at Triumph. The MUTE-E goal is to measure the ratio of MUTE-E conversion compared to muon capture on aluminum to 6 times 10 to the minus 17 if there's no signal. The only reason I put that in is we hope we get a signal. We may not, but in order to compare the sensitivity to these other measurements. So we get 4 orders of magnitude improvement in the sensitivity. This requires a huge number of stop muons, and I'll spend a fair amount of this talk trying to explain how we do that. So the idea is as follows. We have to generate an intense beam of low energy muons, and that intensity has to be far above any existing muon beam line. Then we stop those muons in a thin target. The target ought to be thin so that when the conversion electron leaves the target, it doesn't suffer too much energy degradation. MUTE-E plans to use an aluminum target, by the way. There, the muons, as soon as they stop, they get trapped in atomic orbit, and they settle in the 1s orbit. And then a couple of things mainly happen. A lot of the time, 61% of the time, it annihilates by a weak interaction on the target and blasts out neutrons, protons, and gammas, and these create a fair amount of background noise hits in our detectors. The other 39% of the time, it just decays. So instead of having 2.2 microseconds lifetime like a free muon, the lifetime is reduced to 864 nanoseconds because of this capture. But that's still a relatively long lifetime, which will be important in suppressing backgrounds, which I'll explain. And of course, the third thing that can happen is we see MUTE-E conversion, and that's what we're looking for. The rest of this is junk. All right, so in order to reach our target sensitivity, we have to go to a pulsed beam. So this represents the relative magnitude of these various pulses as a function of time. And these are the proton pulses that repeat every 1,695 nanoseconds. Okay? And these would be absolutely off scale if we didn't scale everything. So this is the pion, the time of the pions stopping in the target with a multiplier of 1,000,000 compared to the protons. And this is a plot of the muons stopping in the target. What we have to do, because pions produce are a significant source of background, they're very dangerous, the pions stop in the target too. We can't get rid of them because we try to get rid of them in our muon beamline, but it's because they're made by pions, you inevitably have a few left over. And these are deadly because when they stop on the target, they can undergo radioactive pion capture, produce a 110 MeV gamma or 130 MeV gamma, which can pair produce in the target and produce 105 MeV electron. This is a very potentially severe background. So the idea with the pulsed beam is to wait these pions out until they're all gone. Either they decayed or they interacted, and then start collecting data out here. Luckily, the muons live a long, the muonic atoms live a long time. This is just the decay rate, which is reflective of the relative number that are still around. So get rid of the junk, wait for the junk to disappear, and then start collecting our data. The other important thing to notice here is that we aren't allowed to have any protons hitting the target anywhere near the selection window. Even one pion produced by that in one of these pulses can produce significant background via radiative pion capture. So what we have to do is suppress the between proton intensity by a factor of 10 to the 10th. So let's take a look at the beam line that's going to give us our muons. The protons come from the downstream direction and strike a production target right here. It's inside the whole beam line itself consists of three distinct superconducting solenoids that are connected in series. And the idea is that low momentum pions that are produced are captured in a spiral here. They decay to muons, and hopefully the muons spiral down this beam line. This is a graded field, goes from 4.5 Tesla to 2.5 Tesla in order to push the particles downstream. It improves the collection. And so then the muons, along with some pions, travel through this transport solenoid down to the stopping target. The S shape prevents direct line for neutrons and gammas hitting the detectors. There's a collimator in the middle that's offset vertically that selects low energy negative muons and more or less gets rid of other kinds of unwanted particles. And then the particles have stopped here, and then we look for this conversion electron that spirals downstream, and this is a uniform magnetic field in the spectrometer region. It spirals through this tracker and then lands in the calorimeter. Between here and here, there's another gradient field going from 2 Tesla to 1 Tesla, and that helps reflect some conversion electrons going upstream back downstream towards the detector, improving the acceptance. This is just a simulation of what happens to the mu minuses. When they go around the curve, the spiraling particles drift up if they're negative, and they spiral down if they're positive. And there's some momentum selection here, too. And so the collimator is offset vertically and just lets those negative particles through. And then it bends around the other way, which recenters the beam. There's a tremendous resemblance between our experiment and the Melk experiment proposal at INR in the early 1990s. So many of the novel techniques that we're applying in MUTA-E came from that proposal. That was Lobachev and Jilkabayev. So the key advances to remember here to get our improved sensitivity is, first of all, having a very highly efficient solenoid system that produces that's very efficient at collecting muons. Okay, and then secondly, this pulsed proton beam. A third thing I could mention that just comes with MUTA-E conversion, a big experimental advantage, is the fact that the energy of the signal is way above a lot of the background, which I'll talk a little bit about in a moment. Contrast that with MUTA-E gamma, where the electron and the gamma are in a sea of background particles from ordinary decay. So MUTA-E is largely using facilities that already existed at Fermilab. I'm not going to go into detail here. I'm just going to tell you that we start with 8 GeV protons at 8 kilowatts, send them into this recycler ring, which is shared with NOVA. We extract it out of there into this delivery ring, and that delivery ring has a cyclotron period of 1,695 nanoseconds. So that's the key thing, and then we peel off a little bit of the beam on each turn, and we get our pulse beam, and it goes over to MUTA-E right here. An important aspect of this is the fact that we can run at the same time as NOVA, and in fact, we're using beam that NOVA can't use. So here are a few pictures. This is a cross-section of the transport solenoid, the S-shaped transport solenoid of a superconductor. We've already got the production length of superconductor for all the magnets, and almost all the QA is finished. Half the coils of the transport solenoid, the S-shaped solenoid, are wound. And General Atomics in San Diego is building the production solenoid and the detector solenoid, and they're tooling up now for fabrication. So let's take a closer look at the Beauty-E detectors. This is the detector solenoid. Muons come spiraling in. They stop in this series of thin aluminum foils. They're suspended by tungsten wires. And then we look for the conversion electron that spirals downstream through this spectrometer section where the field is fairly uniform. We need to have good energy resolution on that electron to get rid of some background, which I'll talk about. And then the electromagnetic calorimeter is essential for particle identification and track confirmation. So the tracker looks like this. It consists of panels with these straws stretched across. And this is an arc of a circle. You put three of these together and you get a circle. I'll show you in a second. And basically it consists of 5 millimeter diameter straws with extremely thin walls and 15 micron walls, less than 15 microns. And remember, this has to run in a vacuum, so you have to, they have to be very vacuum tight. So we take a bunch of these panels and make them into a circle, then we put a bunch of these panels together, and then we rotate them relative to each other, and we wind up with a pattern that looks like this. Okay, so you have a series of these in a row, and it's about 3 meters long. And 1,620 millimeters in diameter. So, looking down the axis of the tracker and behind that the calorimeter, there's a hole. Okay? And here's a track. So, we're looking down, and this is the shadow of the target. And this is the inside radius of the tracker and the calorimeter, and then this is the active part of the calorimeter and the tracker. And low momentum particles don't have enough transverse momentum to hit the tracker, but high momentum particles like the 105 MeV conversion electron do. So the reason we want to get rid of these is because the muons, we have 10 to the 10th hertz muon stopping in the target. And these are just the electrons from decay of those particles. And if they had enough energy to get to the tracker, you'd be overwhelmed. So the idea is that this is the distribution of electrons in muon decay in orbit. Looks like this. So anything with a momentum less than this doesn't have enough transverse momentum to hit the tracker or the calorimeter. So we get rid of a tremendous amount of our background that way. Yet the acceptance for the 105 MeV conversion electron is high. So this is the calorimeter. It consists of 860 cesium iodide crystals in two disks. Again, they have a hole, and they're separated by what we call half a wavelength here. So if this particle sort of weaving down here misses the goes through the first hole, it generally hits the second one. So the efficiency is quite good. It's going to give excellent time resolution, position information, and a confirmation of the energy of this particle, and it provides crucial particle identification for cosmic ray muons that believe it or not, the discrimination against muons in the tracker is good, but it isn't good enough. JINR is a major participant and contributor to the calorimeter. They built one of these prototypes. Vladimir told you about that. We have to surround the entire detector solenoid with a cosmic ray veto, because if we don't veto cosmic rays with an efficiency of 99.99%, we will get conversion electron fakes. In fact, if we didn't have a veto at all, we'd get one false event per day. The way it's built up, this entire thing is built up of four layers of scintillators with wavelength shifting fibers down the middle, two each here, and then read out at both ends by SIPM detectors. There'll be a 5-nanosecond coincidence window between layers and 125-nanosecond veto window because of variation in the time in the tracker, the drift time. And we anticipate this will have 5% dead time. One of the big challenges here is protecting the cosmic ray veto from all the neutrons that are produced in the muon captures in the stopping target itself. So there's a very thick, concrete shield on the inside of this between the solenoid and the detectors. Okay, I've covered that. Again, this is an area where GINR is making major contributions. Here you see a picture taken recently at the Fermilab test beam. This is some of the assembly set up at that's being set up at the University of Virginia. So in the end, what sort of signal, what would the signal sort of look like? This is a simulation. And what we do is assume that we have a branching ratio of 1 times 10 to the minus 16, remembering that our single event sensitivity is like 3 times 10 to the minus 17. So this is a simulation. Oops. Obviously, it isn't going to be smooth like this. We're going to have a few events, okay. But this is a simulation. This is the electrons from muons decaying in orbit. We call those DIO. So there's a high energy tail. And then this is the conversion electron that we see. And if we set the momentum window correctly, then the signal to noise, the background from the decay in orbit electrons is under control. We don't assume, that's wrong, assuming 1 MeV full width half maximum. This simulation involves a hit level simulation with realistic energy losses in all the targets and the tracker and so on. So we don't assume that. That's what we get. Okay. So let's look at the background table. Mostly people get blinded by this, but remember these muons decaying in orbit, these electrons, they are actually the biggest contribution to our total background of about 0.36 events, okay, through the life of the experiment. That involves 3.6 times 10 to the 20th protons on target running that requires 3 years of steady running. That's the biggest background. The pion capture, this radiative pion capture that I told you about, that's much smaller. That's pretty much under control. Cosmic rays are an important contribution, even with 99.99% veto efficiency. These are the goals: single event sensitivity better than 3 times 10 to the minus 17, 10,000 times better than previous experiments with a very big physics reach. So here you see physics runtime 3 years per year. We get new, we get 0.02 muon stops per incident proton. And the acceptance of our detectors is about 8.5%. So here, this is with this is the groundbreaking. Okay, then this is the picture inside the hall in April of 2016. So the April 2015 was groundbreaking. This is the inside of the hall 1 year later, and then just this past December, we had a completed building. In fact, you can see the collaboration inside the building. This is the pit where we're going to put the detector solenoid, and then it makes a hook, and that's where the production solenoid is, and all that's, this gets covered by shielding. The collaboration itself consists of more than 200 scientists from 37 institutes and 6 countries. So where are we? We've completed the technical design report, this huge document, in October of 2014. For those of you who aren't familiar with the DOE process, there's a CD, series of CD hurdles that we have to pass. CD3 is basically go ahead and build it and we're giving you the money. But we had some advanced CDs, CD3A, that allowed us to develop and purchase all the superconducting because it was long lead time. And then we got further early award of CD3B that enabled us to start building building itself and some of the TS transport solenoid, the S-shaped fabrication. And then finally, we were awarded full authorization for the remaining construction last July. This is where we are. And we've fabricated the superconductor, done with that. We're done with the solenoid design. We're developing General Atomics and Fermilab are developing the fabrication and quality assurance of the solenoids themselves. The detector hall is complete. The solenoid infrastructure now has to go in there, and then we take the built solenoids and add them to the infrastructure, and we have an installation and commissioning of the entire system. In the meantime, we're building the detectors. We hope to have cosmic tests in FY20 in the garage position off the end of the detector solenoid. The accelerator beamline is coming along. MUTE is using the same front end as we are, and so that part has been undergoing tuning. That's what they're doing now. They're trying to see stored muons. They are seeing some, but there's lots of work to do in that. It's a complicated beamline. So, in summary, we've seen that we know that neutrinos violate lepton flavor violation, and that's one of the most important results in the recent decades. And now there's a worldwide effort to try to detect charged lepton flavor violation, which has never been seen. According to the extended standard model, the signal has to be very tiny. So anything you see experimentally has to be a sign of new physics or background. And the muon experiments are expected to be among the most sensitive searches for charged lepton flavor violation. MUTE is designed to improve the experimental sensitivity by four orders of magnitude. The project is fully approved and funded. JINR is playing a crucial role in several areas. Commissioning in 2020, full data taking in 2022. Thank you.
Thank you very much for this nice and clear presentation. Are there any questions or comments? Have a small question. You, in one of your first slides, I think slide 3 or 4, you have a comparative table of what limits have already been achieved. No, I think much earlier.
I have to go way back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, this one. So this PSI future generation experiment has a comparable sensitivity, or expected to have a comparable sensitivity within a factor of 2 of the MUTE experiment. What is the relative timetable of both experiments? I mean, who?
Well, they haven't. I guess I have to say that as of a year ago, I don't have the most recent, but as of a year ago, they're still developing a detector that can withstand the huge rates. A small detector with very thin pixel detectors. And for that, they were going to get down to, I think, a few times 10 to the minus 14. 10 to the minus 16 is pretty far in the future. They have to build a new beam line that, as far as I know, has not been approved.
So they're not competing in the timetable with you?
No.
Okay.
No.
Thank you. Any other comment or question? Okay, so let's thank our speaker again. The next report is on the weak decays of B mesons in the light of the search for new physics by Mikhail Ivanov.
thank you very much. Yes, as I announced, I'm going to discuss some hot topics in B physics, in which there are some indication on violation or deviation from standard model. Basically, I will concentrate my discussion on two topics. First one related to so-called bottom charm transition when B goes to charm quark. This is so-called semileptonic decays. For instance, B to G tau nu tau, where lepton flavor violation was found on the level of 4 sigma. And the second topic, rare flavor changing intracurrent decays, which is induced by B2S, neutral current currents, which are not available in standard model at tree level. All calculation related to hadron paths of matrix elements will be done in covariant quark confinement model, which we developed for a long time here. And I will give you now short introduction and finish by summary. Well, now I will start from the bottom charm transition in the standard model. As you know, that there are three generations of leptons in the standard model: electron, muon, and tau, and with corresponding neutrino. Standard model assumes that the interaction of leptons are universal for all leptons. So it is the same for all three generations. The most precise test in the decays kaon into inu and kaon to muenu confirmed muon universality. But recent studies of leptonic and semileptonic bimesum decays B to tau, mu tau, B to G, mu tau, have shown the possible violation of the lepton universality in tau sector. Next. Here I can show diagrams which is responsible for this decay. Here is the diagram which describes leptonic decays. And here is more complicated semileptonic decays. You see, it is clearly that there is separation of the diagram on two parts. One is responsible for strong interaction, like B meson goes to BU, and the another part, how B and U meson interact with W and W goes. This is a standard model part, and more or less is clear how to do this. But basic uncertainties in theoretical calculation, of course, comes from a strong part of diagram. Like here, strong part is described by only one quantity, lepton constant. And here is more, there is form factor which describe transition B to DD star. Well, and there is no theory, I mean reliable, only model and some motivation which comes from heavy quark effective theory. So this point, calculation of hadronic paths give us much uncertainties for theory, for theoretical calculation. I will show you the expression for decay widths in standard model for B2 lepton pair. It is here. You see, this is part is a red one is exactly standard model part. You see, decay widths proportional to lepton mass square, so it is strongly suppressed for electron and muon, but it is not Z for tau lepton. And there is leptonic decay constant FB, which, as I said, this describes hadronic path of diagram, and it must be calculated in some model. Recent lattice, for instance, QCD predictive B to be equal this value, and by using this values and uncertainty, one can come to this number, which is called for branching average in standard model. As I said, the decays to electron and muon are strongly suppressed. For semi-leptonic decays, expression for differential decay widths is more complicated. Of course, there is some part which come from standard model, just phase shift, etc. And there is part which may be written in terms of helicity amplitude in such a way. There are four independent helicity amplitudes here, and all hadronic effects are in this helicity amplitude. Compared to leptonic decays, this decay is much more rich in the case of dependence of variables. For instance, for branching refraction, it depends on Q square, and Q square varies in the full kinematical region. Well, now, in order to minimize both experimental and theoretical uncertainties, normally people measure the ratio of branching, like B to G tau divided by B to G muon or electron, does not matter. In almost the same, this is for G is a pseudoscalar measure, and this star is vector measure. And here is, I mean, if I use some reliable calculation which come from lattice or heavy quark effective theory, we will get this number. And what happened? You see, here I took this picture from one experimental review. It is shown here branching ratio for leptonic decays and ratio of branchings RG for pseudoscalar and for vector measure. Here available experimental data from Babar, Bell, LHCb. LHCb is able to measure only G star in the final states, but they are prepared to measure also RG soon. Blue lines, this is expectation from standard model. Red lines, average which obtained by heavy flavor averaging group, HFAG. You see, there is disagreement with standard model prediction, even this not much, but here you see quite sizable. So if take averages for raw measurements, one come to these values, which is different on the level from standard model expectation on the level of about 4 sigma. Here, this situation is shown in this picture. Here are the pseudoscalar vector measure. Green line from Babar, Bell, and average, what is more important, average of heavy flavor averaging groups is this red. This is standard model expectation. So this one sigma contour. So it is clearly indication, at least on this level of uncertainties, deviation from the standard model expectation. Now, theoretically, there are several ways to explain this deviation. Of course, one needs to go beyond the standard model and assume something more. For instance, there are two ways to assume something more. First of all, extend Higgs sector, assume that there are two Higgs doublet with charged Higgs, and charged Higgs mediate weak decays, very similar to W. but of course couple different two leptons with different masses. It may give explanation. Another way, for instance, to introduce into consideration lepta quark, which interact with boson, with B quark and lepton in such a way, and also may give sizable contribution to the decays. But there is another way. Instead of implementing extra particle into standard model, just to introduce, to extend a set of so-called weak operator, which is responsible for leptonic semi-leptonic decays. And I will discuss the second way to know. The second topic concerns BS transition, so transition bottom to strange quark, which is neutral electrically, and neutral current does not exist on three level in standard model. Such transition appear only on the level of box diagram, loop diagrams, like box diagram here and penguin diagram here. That means mediated by exchange W, neutrino, top quark, etc. And here, of course, such decays were suppressed in the dynamically. And so if you introduce something new on three-level Lagrangian, of course, it will be competition between the loop integrals and maybe new particles, even with very large masses. Here I will show you some typical dependence of differential branching function. Here is kinematical region from 4m square up to maximum q square. The first one mediated by so-called C7 operator, penguin, which comes from penguin diagram. This region is interference of 7 and 9 operator, here 9 and 10, whereas it's needed to take into account long distance contribution from charm, anti-charm. And there is, of course, contribution from charmonium, basic state, and radial excitation. But normally they cut this region in analyzing physical observables. I will show again, I took this picture from experimental review. Here you can see data from LHCb for B2K star plasma minus, and compare this calculation done on lattice and light cone QCD sum rule. You see also there is indication that data in some sense do not agree with expectation of standard model. Here is B2K star, B2K, B2K star, BS to 5 plus minus, and also complementary decay to meson. This is lambda B baryon. And measurement is available now by at LHCb. You see there are more observables, not only branching ratio, but there is observables like forward backward, longitudinal polarization, and some observables which is called P5. You see, people is looking for some observable where it is possible to minimize theoretical uncertainties. Normally, it's like in RD, RD star, it is just ratio of some certain combination, which appear in front of angular decay distribution. Now, let me very short discuss our approach. In our approach, we have covering quark model, which describe in transition of hadron into its quark current. For instance, for meson, we have quark antiquark currents, baryon, 3-quark currents, tetraquark, for instance, 4-quark currents, etc. And we have some normalization condition which allows us to determine coupling constants between this transition. Then all matrix elements are described by such kind of diagram. As I said, here is the electroweak part, which is out of our consideration, and here is hadronic parts. We simply should calculate Feynman diagrams. K is loop integrals, and more complicated is this one. What about? I don't have much time, and probably I will skip the details of calculation here. I will just show what model parameters. Parameters is quark masses, U, G, strain, charm, bottom, parameters of quark confinement, and some size parameters which respond in something related to size of hadrons. So we start our so all parameters were fixed by fitting well established experimental data. We think that uncertainties for model calculation is about 10%, and I can explain why, on the level of matrix elements. So all parameters are fixed, and we investigated the bottom charm transition within our approach, assuming that in addition to standard model VCB, here is just one, there is contribution from other operators which are not available in standard model. So we take all possible set. If for now, this is vector for operator with left chirality, and we add for fermionic interaction with right chirality. We introduced scalar operator with both left and right chirality. Of course, at lepton sector have only left chirality. All right, here is the necessary notation, and we come to back to standard model if we assume that all these Wilson coefficients are simply equal to zero. Of course, we assume that always neutrino is left-handed, and new physics affects leptons of the third generation, only tau lepton. Then what we did, first of all, we have to evaluate hadron path, which is described by diagram which I have shown above. We are able to evaluate form factor in the full kinematical region. For instance, light cone Cassidy Sunroom can do it only up to very certain Q square, for, and then they use interpolation. Then what we simply did, we did a so-called one parameter fit. That means we assume that there is contribution only from one Wilson coefficient, other are equal to zero. Then we repeat the situation assuming that another Wilson coefficient is not zero and others are zero. So what here you can see allowed, we found that we cannot describe available experimental data assuming that Wilson coefficients are real. We should use, assumption that there is both real part and imaginary part for Wilson coefficients. So in this one parameter fit, you see, we found allowed region here, green for 2 sigma, and 3 sigma is yellow. This is allowed region for lepton part, and this is allowed region for right part of vector coefficients. And similar was done for scalar right was is not essential, and tensor part. There is no right-handed tensor part. Well, and here you can see the average of Wilson coefficients, left, scalar, right, and then. Then what we did, we plot the dependence of a ratio for Rd and Rd star for different Wilson coefficients, VL for D, VL for D star, and the same for right-handed D star. Here, thick black dashed lines are the standard model prediction. Gray bands, which is almost invisible here, include new physics effect corresponding to sigma 4 VLR. Red dotted, this is expectation from standard, yes, for the best fit values of the new physics. And the same for other Wilson coefficients, scalar and tensor. Well, but there is possibility to study more observables. That means we can find more information if we study cascade decay. B goes to D star vector, and D star vector goes to D pi. So there are more observables because of here two planes, two polar angles, one for lepton part, theta star for hadron parts, and azimuthal angle which between these two planes. So in this case, we are able to study both experimentally and theoretically more combinations like forward, backward, etc. Then lepton side convexity parameters, then hadron side convexity parameters, etc. Well, and there is more interesting possibility to study more observables in the decay, in the cascade decay. But when tau goes to four leptons or to rho pi, etc., it was suggested by Kamalich and his co-author. But of course, it is clear that tau cannot live much. The decay lifetime is very small. But there is possibility to investigate product of decays, like muon, and take information from studying dotted decay particles. And a recent measurement by Bell of longitudinal polarization give us hope that it would be possible to study it also transverse and maybe normal, which is absent in standard model. So this is very interesting possibility to study new physics effects. So one can analyze, for instance, four modes, tau to pi nu tau to rho nu tau to mu nu for fermionic decays. And here is I plot the corresponding scattering planes. Well, and here, if in terms, if you integrate all angles except of polar angles of decay of tau and azimuthal angle, then this distribution function may be written in this form, where T is transverse, normal, and longitudinal polarization. Well, and we did it, this analysis, and here we plot, like in previous plot, dependence of all these observables, I mean polarization, prediction in standard model, and with fitted parameters which describe new physics effects. I don't have time to. Here is, I give you just numbers. Here is standard model prediction. For instance, normal polarization is zero, strictly. And here is prediction which comes from a different scenario of new physics. If you take into account scalar operator, tensor operator, etc. So this is just predictions. Now we analyze Ray Eddy case, B2K case star. Here is much more, because as I said, these decays go are not available on tree level. So there are more operators. There are 10 operators here. More important are so-called 7 operators, which describe interaction of SB current with photon, 9 operators like this, and 10 operators. And prime operators means they are responsible for new physics. And the same way one needs to analyze available experimental data and to in the case of deviation from standard model, one needs to determine the values of the Wilson, new Wilson coefficients. Here, a lot, so we also describe the transition. Here we can see calculation of form factor, comparison of our form factor with form factor taking from calculation of light cone QCD Samrow. And here I'm able to show you only a selected number. I cannot give you all analysis. Here's the numbers for Brainchik ratio. You see they're very small for rarity case. And finally, we calculate complementary decays of B hadrons, lambda B baryon decays. In this case, theoretically, such a calculation with lambda baryons is much more complicated, because here we encounter to evaluate two loop diagrams. In quantum field theory, it is quite difficult. It's needed to create some code in analytical and for numerical evaluation. So, well, here is numbers for lambda C, lambda B baryon. Almost there is no data for lambda B baryon. This is only prediction here. In 2013, LHCb claimed the measurement of branching ratio of lambda b to lambda mu plus mu minus. Of course, uncertainties quite large, and to be compared with our predictions. And then, probably I will skip. My time is out. Probably I skip this everything, and we'll go to summary. So, summarize this talk, I would like to say that the observed enhancement of the tonic mode in the semi-leptonic and leptonic Bemesian decay may indicate a violation of lepton universality. Well, but of course experimental uncertainties are relatively large now. But we hope that in the nearest future, LHCb is going to measure B2G and improve results for B2G star. Also, they measured already, and they are going to measure the semi-leptonic decays of lambda B baryon, which is complementary to B meson decays. Also, Bell is going to be upgraded, both collider and detector. And in this case, there is also, as I said, there is first measurement of longitudinal polarization. They will look for this extra possibility of decay tau lepton into four fermion or semi-leptonic decays. And this is gives us more information about effects or possible effects of new physics. Of course, if experiments will confirm that there is solid deviation from the standard model, then of course it should change our understanding of MET and will give a push for intense program of experimental and theoretical research. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Yes, please.
Please, can you explain why the tau polarization is so important as a signal of new physics?
It is not so important. It is important just extra source of extra information. So this is new observables. And study of even if you have more observable, it is good. So we have more possibility to see what whereas there is a deviation from standard model.
Standard model allows for tau polarization, yes?
Yes, but uncertainty is large.
So what will be signal of new physics?
No, for instance, in standard model, normal polarization is zero. But if it is not zero, this is indication.
So this was my question.
Yeah.
So non-zero polarization.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, so let's thank our speaker again. So we are almost done for today. We have now in the next room the poster session. There are 12 in total, and as usual, we are supposed to grade them: 3 for the best, 2 for the second best, 1 for the third best. Then after the poster session at 7, we have at the same place the reception, so it will be all together, poster and reception.